we're focused on a time in life that's after kids are grown. It's that transition from being a hands-on parent to an empty nester and what relationships look like with grown children. It's a conversation about parenthood after the kids grow up here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You may call into question your self-worth, your identity, as we think about relevancy. Having purpose and meaning at home and at work is vitally important. Aviva Wittenberg-Cox is an author and speaker focused on leadership, gender, and business. She's CEO of a global gender balance consulting company called 21st. Her book, Late Love, Mating, and Maturity, came out earlier this year. And her recent article for Harvard Business Review that's caught our attention, it's called What I Learned About Working Parenthood After My Kids Grew Up. Aviva, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, what inspired you to write about this period in time after the kids are grown?
Well, I think there's a lot of negative or sad writing about, you know, the difficulty of aging and empty nesting. And since I experienced it rather differently, I thought I'd just offer another perspective that some of the people I know and hang out with are experiencing.
How have you experienced it differently?
Well, I thought it was a really joyful time. I thought having children leave successfully, start their own lives without too many issues, and staying connected in a very different way freed me up to, especially for, you know, professionally engaged women, to, as one friend of mine said, now I can focus only on work. That's so easy.
That's so easy. So a little bit of perspective here. What does your family look like? The kids you have, their ages?
I have now a 25 and a 22-year-old.
And your relationship, very different now at 25 and 22 than it certainly was at 1 and 5 or 11 and 15. So tell us about that adjustment away from being that hands-on parent, that chauffeur, that monitor. And your what does your relationship look like now with your son and daughter?
Well, as the research shows, parents today spend more time with their children than back in the 50s and 60s when there were full-time parents at home. So we've become, you know, super aggressive, assertive, caring helicopter parents, and it takes, you know, a lot of time and energy. And so once they go, it frees up like an enormous amount of time and energy, especially if they're doing okay and you don't have to, you know, worry or you're not concerned about how they're doing. It leaves you with this enormous amount of freedom and refocus on yourself, your own goals, and eventually your couple. If you're in a couple, you can start focusing back on your spouse and partner and redefine what it is you guys want to do together.
When did you notice that your kids were seeing you as a full-fledged individual and not just as mom, provider, rule maker?
Well, I think probably about as soon as they left, right? And then they start, rather than chafing at, you know, instructions, which I always had a decent relationship with these children, but when they start calling quite routinely with some really interesting questions, and they are looking for advice and support and another perspective, and they suddenly realize that some of the stuff you've done in your life and in your work is strangely relevant to their own lives and their own jobs.
So they're calling a lot. What are their questions sounding like? What are they asking about?
Oh my God, almost anything. So I have one who calls when things go badly, and I have another who calls when things go well. So it depends very much on the individual child, but I get questions about how to lead a team, how to recruit people, how to evaluate them, how to convince somebody to change, how to manage your boss, how to manage roommates when you start having conflicts. There's a vast range. I'm also a coach, so these kids have watched me, you know, explore a lot of these issues of leadership and management and interpersonal relations for a long time, but they thought I was just talking a lot earlier in their lives. Now they actually think it might be worth listening.
Aviva Wittenberg-Cox is our guide. She runs a gender balance consulting firm called 21st. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Are you a parent whose kids are now adults? How did your connection to them change as they age? Were you a working parent? What do you realize about raising kids while working? And do you regret anything, or are you less hard on yourself now? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. I'm wondering, Aviva, do you give them similar advice that you would give to any one of your clients in your consulting business as you as they approach these issues that they find in the workforce, whether it comes down to how they interact with their colleagues, as you mentioned, managing a supervisor's interactions, is your advice similar to how you run your own business?
Sometimes yes, and sometimes, I mean, I think it's also important that every young person encounter what they're ready for and what they're interested in. So it's not so much giving advice as helping them, you know, think through issues and situations and explore their own reactions. I don't know what their own leadership style will end up being. So it's a little bit exploring with them. How do they react to certain situations? How does that make them feel? Are they self-aware? And making them know that they do have the resource and skills within. Sometimes it just takes a little bit of standing back to think about a situation before you rush into it. And then to be able afterwards to analyze, did that work? Or could I have perhaps tried something differently? So I think I try and restrain from the advice giving and, because I've seen a million situations, here's one way and here's another, and instead kind of default into more of a kind of coaching. Let's explore what you want to do about this and what your strengths are in order to cope or address these questions.
And you have some advice, things you wish you'd do better in the midst of the child rearing chaos, and don't sweat the small stuff. We always hear that. Don't burn out on being this perfectionist parent. Perhaps easier said than done. Why is it worth it for parents to push past those things?
Well, push past, I mean, it's even better if you never settle into it. I think what you really want to do is avoid projecting your own ambitions onto your children. Every kid is going to have very different skills and dreams. And so it is actually quite interesting, I think, if you can let them blossom relatively unshackled and not do too much for them. The world they're emerging into is going to be ambiguous, fast-changing, multifaceted, and what you're really trying to develop is their skills to cope with things you can't even imagine. So it's really less about giving them answers, but really teaching them how to help ask good questions and then adjust themselves to explore and keep testing a variety of answers.
And along the way, you write about keep your ambition focused on your own career, not theirs. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, really, I think one of the challenges, I think, for the generation of now boomers is that longevity is offering us, an extra decade to two or three decades of life. I mean, we're living longer and healthier than ever before. We have a whole half, if not almost a half of life after children leave, which means that we have a lot to do ourselves without getting overly concerned about what our children do. And I think if we don't manage our own perspectives, we tend to not age so well, which is a burden to our children. And so, focus a little bit of attention on your own goals, your own aspirations, and let your kids find their own. It's we're usually enough work for each of us is enough work for ourselves.
Parenting advice seems to come from countless places. Everyone has an opinion on how to be a working parent. However, there's less of a discussion around empty nest parents and what they think and how their roles change once kids are adults. We're talking about this stage in life here on The Morning Show. Aviva Wittenberg-Cox is our guide. She runs a gender balance consulting firm called 21st. Recently writing about this in the Harvard Business Review, you can join in 800-642-1234. Are you a parent whose kids are now adults? How has your connection to them evolved as they've aged? Were you a working parent? What do you realize about raising kids while working? Do you regret anything? Or are you less hard on yourself now? Call in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the discussion after this news update here on the Ideas Network. Many baby boomers are working longer than their parents did, and after the intensive parent decades, usually between 30 and mid-50s, there's this chunk of time to consider what comes next in life. Perhaps a career change, perhaps a relationship change, but of course, a new relationship with those adult kids. We're exploring all of these things here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Aviva Wittenberg-Cox stays with us. She's an author and speaker focused on leadership, gender, and business. Her book is Late Love, Mating in Maturity. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you make major changes in your personal life when your kids grew up? What prompted you to rethink or perhaps reframe your partnership? What choices have you made in your career now that your children are on their own? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Aviva, there is this chunk of time, as you write about, after those kids leave, and certainly well before retirement, a solid decade or so where you could do perhaps a career change, maybe an encore type career. What is happening in this chunk of time?
Well, I think that there are almost two entirely new decades emerging in these what will soon be 100-year lives. And I think what we're seeing is the 20s is starting to be called emerging adulthood as people get married later and settle down later and have children later. The 20s becomes a time of freedom and self-discovery and exploration. And I think it's almost the same in the 50s. It becomes a similar sort of new decade. People are younger, healthier, more active, more open. A couple of the big universities have even put in sort of new one-year programs to transition 60-year-olds into their final calling. And I think it's just a time of absolutely no longer so much a time of recreation. I think that's a little bit going less into favor and far more a time of recreation, where you realize you've got another 20 or 30 years of healthy, active life, and you may not want to continue doing what you've been doing for the last 20 or 30, and you have the opportunity to rethink, redesign.
Are companies on board with this as they look at their aging workforce and keeping those employees relevant and also mentoring the new recruits?
Not yet. I mean, I think there are a handful that are getting more flexible. I suggest that, you know, there's so many generations, there's so many different segments now demanding flexibility in terms of career styles. It's not just the over 50s who are asking for it. For a long time, women have been asking for more flexibility from companies. And I think what's adding on to that now is the millennium generation is also flexibility hungry. So what we're seeing is between millennials, women, and the over 50 crowd, the majority of the labor force is really asking for a lot more career flexibility, time and place, and also pacing over the decades. So I think it will come, but it's still an adjustment for what was a pretty rigid focus on a 30-year upper-out linear career cycle.
And when you mean pacing through the decades, you mean the ability to step back, lean in, lean out? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, we're so dominated by the thinking of what a career used to look like, and companies' systems are still built on that. So, you get into a company in your 20s, you're identified or not as a fast tracker, you scale up in your 30s, you perfection in your 40s, you lead in your 50s. I mean, it's very, very fixed. And I think that hasn't ever really fit for most women. And I think it's not fitting for this new emerging group of healthy, active older people who would like to stay, but maybe not 24/7, maybe not full time. They're going to want different kinds of forms of work. So a lot of them end up going into consulting or self-employment and then, work back in with their existing employers in a more flexible way.
Numbers out last month show 71% of mothers with kids under age 18 are working or looking for work. And last year, that number was almost 93% of fathers in the workforce. When you consult with companies on gender balance, how do you encourage them, or what do you tell them about as they consider parents?
Well, we talk about a lot of things, but first you got to get leadership on board to understand all of these trends and issues that we're talking about, right? It has a multiplicity of impacts on companies. And for parents, I think the trend that we're seeing in a number of countries, are moving this way, as well as a number of progressive companies, is to gender neutralize parenting, right? It's no longer so focused on women have children and women need maternity leave, but far more transitioning to embrace the fact that now more men are involved, more same-sex couples, more adopted children. So there's a move away from maternity leave and towards parental leave or even family leave, which incorporates also not just taking care of your kids, but also taking care of your aging parents, which is a huge issue.
Certainly
for the
something
over 50 crowd.
Right, and something the sandwich generation is certainly grappling with right now.
Absolutely, and it's a big one, and it will go on for quite some time.
So as these companies reconsider how the pacing of individual's progression through the corporate structure, and that is saying that that person stays with that company, because oftentimes, especially in this new generation of workers, people are jumping around, going from company to company. So it's also about how do you keep your best people with you? Is that an issue?
I think, there's always a myth, and I think it's everybody keeps repeating it, that people have to be, really transferable, and then a really successful career, you jump from here to here. But actually, the research seems to suggest that career tracks in companies haven't changed that much. And if you look at a number of very large companies that we work for, they have very low turnover, and their employees are very happy to stay with them for decades. So I'd question a little bit how real that is and what kind of companies we're talking about. Then it's companies themselves that are pushing people out and restructuring. That's a different issue.
Talking with consultant Aviva Wittenberg-Cox, her recent article for Harvard Business Review is called "What I Learned About Working Parenthood After My Kids Grew Up." You can join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. And if you're a young adult, let's hear from you. When did you realize your parent was a real person with ideas and talents separate from leading your family? How did your perspective change? Was it difficult to see them through a new lens? And what was helpful about that? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. So, Aviva, treating men and women who are parents equally doesn't create a fair playing field for all. What should managers or leaders consider about men and women, about workplace balance, and also paying women equally to men?
Well, that's a vast issue. So yes, I always argue that this notion, which I think most, well-meaning managers really adhere to and have been educated. We have, I think, as women, educated the men we've grown up next to treat men and women equally. And that was interpreted as equally and the same. And I think that's now reached its limit, that I think men and women and the whole spectrum of genders vary across a masculine and feminine spectrum in a host of delightful ways. And because I think the workplace was largely designed by men for men, the idea of just letting women in as long as they adapt to the dominant culture and systems that were designed has resulted in women succeeding only insofar as they were ready to become men. And I don't think that's a successful or sustainable formula. And now that there are more and more women flooding in, who are now the majority at the bottom of the management pyramid, I think we're going to see some evolutions towards more what I call gender bilingual workplaces, which are fluent in the language of both men and women and able to flex and offer a range of different leadership styles that people can recognize and fit into.
Your TEDx talk that came out last month, you start out by calling out your mother, almost blaming your mother. Why did you decide to point to your mom to talk about gender balance?
Because I was brought up by a really extraordinary woman. My father died when I was really young, and because she did everything and did it well and beautifully and in a very feminine style, I grew up thinking this was the norm. And it took me a long time to discover in life and in work that she wasn't the norm, and equality and balance and powerful women leading in feminine ways is not at all what you see when you get out into some workplaces.
So do you remember those early years? What did you take away from her? What did you learn?
Well, I think I learned by default that never to question that women can do anything and everything and live and survive and raise children on their own. She was a Holocaust survivor. She didn't speak the language when my father died of the country that they had emigrated to. Mm. And yet, with grace and charm and resilience, she showed the way. So the lessons I have is, there's not much that can really get you down if you fight back and power on, not necessarily in an angry or heavy hitting way, but on the contrary, with curiosity and humor and charm. It was a powerful lesson.
Was she working and raising you at the same time?
Absolutely. When my father died, she hadn't actually finished high school because of the war, and she went back to university, got herself an BA and then an MA, and started to teach and was a professor for the rest of her life, well into her 70s, as an early model of late careers.
Do you remember those years as you became an adult and how your relationship evolved with your own mother, who had really had this extraordinary ability to juggle and to manage a home and be successful in her own way?
Well, I think it marked me out as both a career woman, as a feminist. I created women's networks because I realized that, I wanted to empower other women who may not have had such strong models. And we together, really, I have worked almost all my life in one form or another of working and empowering this astonishing wave of women rising all around the world. And I think that's very much thanks to the gratitude and empowerment that I felt gifted with.
Let's move the conversation, pivot a little bit to look at how relationships evolve and coupledom, especially after the kids turn into adults and move on. What have you learned about gender balance affecting relationships?
Well, I discovered that gender balance wasn't just a professional topic, which was an interesting discovery, and that the shifts in gender balance and power between men and women has a huge impact at home as well, and that I found as I turned 50 that I and a number of close friends of mine that I didn't think would suddenly left husbands and marriages that had been a very long standing of 20 or 30 years and decided to recreate their personal lives as well, and that that wasn't just us, that there's been actually a doubling of divorce rates in this age group over the last 20 years. And I set out to explore a little bit more why.
What have you found out? What is going on there?
Well, I think it's one of these, you know, evolutionary areas where this first massive generation of boomer women who have worked all their lives, been pretty financially strong, are able to leave unsatisfactory marriages if they choose to, are. And this is kind of for the first time this has been enabled. And I think it's happening in marriages where those new and shifting balances at home haven't been successfully put on the table, discussed, renegotiated, and that the new roles and new lives that these women may want to create in this last third aren't necessarily aligned with their husbands' goals and dreams for that same period.
So you're calling it gray divorce and remarriage, but it seems like that can also be pretty daunting. How do you even approach that, especially from a relationship point of view, where you've been in a very long relationship, raised kids, and now it's decades into it?
Well, I think it's not for everyone, that's for sure. But I think generally the same kind of women and men, you know, that I've been working with on the career side, the kind of women who want more, keep developing, keep learning, are ambitious for themselves and others, are typically the kind of profile that you're going to find that if the relationship it's also once your children leave, there is a lot more time with your spouse alone with your partner. And if that relationship isn't satisfactory, your attention tends to get drawn there at this period to say, you know, how are we going to reshape and renegotiate this relationship for the next 30 years? And if that doesn't sound like a lot of fun, you've got yourself an issue. And then it's what I call it choosing to choose, right? There are always choices, either to stay or to go. And I think that's a choice that a lot of people should make very consciously. It's an important one. And I don't say that leaving is easy or recommended, but generally the people who have to leave, it's not really a choice. It's a little bit of a survival mechanism.
We're talking about the new dimensions that relationships take once kids are grown. There's a lot of talk about empty nest syndrome, this transition period in which some parents experience feelings of loss, sadness, and or grief after children grow up. We're talking about the possibilities of the relationships, the possibilities at work here on The Morning Show. Consultant Aviva Wittenberg-Cox stays with us. Her recent article for Harvard Business Review is called What I Learned About Working Parenthood After My Kids Grew Up. You can join in at 800-642-1234. And what have you learned as the kids have grown up and moved on? Are you a parent whose kids are now adults? How did your connection to them evolve as they've aged? Has that looked like? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Back after this news. Parents make different choices when their kids are on their own and out of the house, and it's not necessarily a symptom of empty nest syndrome. We're exploring this stage in life here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the most recent census data, nearly 55% of young adults age 18 to 24 live at home in our country. We're exploring the changing relationships after kids become adults, whether they live under your roof or on their own. Aviva Wittenberg-Cox is our guide. She's an author and speaker focused on leadership, gender, and business. She's CEO of a global gender balance consulting firm, and her recent book is called Late Love, Mating in Maturity. You can join in with your empty nester insights, 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. Are you a parent whose kids are now adults? How did your connection to them evolve as they've aged? Were you a working parent? What did you realize about raising kids while working, and do you regret anything? Or are you less hard on yourself now? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Aviva, I thought it was really fun for you when I read about how you look at traveling for work now with your spouse also traveling with you, but you can find some downtime and do a little bit of sightseeing along the way. When couples have dual careers and it is later in life, how are we seeing some shifts as they approach their work?
Well, I think the whole issue of dual careers is really changing as women, you know, become far more professional, as couples balance, and we're seeing a whole different kind of sharing and switching of models. So I talk about these emerging dual career models, which are leaving behind the sort of traditional single career model or lead career model, where one kind of led and the other followed or had a lesser, less demanding career. And I call them all kinds of names, the mergers, the parallelograms, the complements. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're seeing in these aging couples is often women reach their career peaks, I would say, on average, a little later than men, in part because of some of the flexibility issues of the 30s. And often they are with men who are slightly older than them, which combines very nicely into this surprising phase one may discover, which is, you know, these 50 and 60 year old women who are taking off and becoming powerhouses in their professional lives, and their semi-retired husbands who are more than happy, having had their own time in the sun, to come along for comfort and carrying of suitcases. It's a delight, let me tell you.
So it sounds like you have some personal experience in that area.
And you know, and who guessed? I mean, nobody tells you this stuff, right? I think there's just different options that different couples are finding, and who gets what out of their career and life and work, and how does that evolve, and how do two people negotiate their phases of life? And I just say, the more, I call it conscious coupling, the more couples can work together to get everything they want out of life by managing, you know, two careers, rather than having slightly competitive individual careers that are often getting in the way of each other.
Oh, so there's a lot of teamwork here. You're managing change together?
Absolutely. I always say it's so interesting to me how much time we spend at work on leadership skills and team building and away days and all this stuff. And we don't bring any of those skills and habits home for what really is the most important team in our lives. It's our couple teams. And if we did, I think, yeah, we could leverage a huge amount of benefit.
Going back to the relationships where later in life a couple realizes that this is not for them and one decides to leave, what happens to that spouse who doesn't make that decision, who is not the initiator?
Well, I think this is no fun, right? I mean, splitting up is one of the hardest things that anybody will ever do. So you never enter this kind of thing lightly. And what I've found is generally there are two people, right? There's always the leaver and the left. And the problem is generally if The leaver is usually the person who has been thinking about this issue for many years. People don't like walk out the door in a sudden flounce. They generally are sitting on this for 5 to 10 years of unhappiness, growing loneliness, frustration, and usually some degree of attempt to repair things, work it out, negotiate a shifting relationship. And when they see that doesn't work, they end up usually making a decision to leave. And the trouble is that is the moment where the left begins the journey, the internal journey that the leaver has just finished navigating. And they will have a number of years to adjust through all the phases that we know of loss and readjustment before they come out the other side and decide what they want to do with their lives.
And the leaver then goes on this exploration journey of finding themselves?
Well, sometimes that may have started beforehand, right? But certainly in terms of healthy and happy recoupling in this phase, it really helps not to dash into it without having spent time figuring out who this new human is in a very new phase of life, right? I think this aging 50s and 60s is a time where you want to spend a little bit of time looking inwards before you leap.
And leaping when you mean it, leaping into a new relationship.
Leaping into a new relationship or even a new phase or a new professional career, right? Every transition takes multiple years. People think, you know, people talk commonly about midlife crises, but actually we usually have little crises around every kind of transition in both our personal and professional lives. And as humans, we don't transition all that quickly. So if you're changing careers or you're changing partners, all of that will take usually 3 to 5 years from the starting to think about it, the general levels of dissatisfaction, the frustration, the decision-making, and finally the action. And then the looking of what are you going to do next or who are you going to live with next is a whole new journey that requires its own time.
And meanwhile, the adult children are watching all this. They're taking this in.
Absolutely, which is why I also think it really helps to leave your children with a legacy that you can leave well and responsibly and lovingly and well prepared without some of the tearing apart and violence that we used to see. And I think people are actually getting better at that. Everybody hears about the nightmare divorces. What you don't hear about is the relatively amicable and well-managed ones where parents stay friends. You're going to stay a co-parent for the rest of your life.
At some point, parents find their children, of course, no longer need them. So what advice do you want to leave us with as we think about who we are when this time comes?
I think your children always need you. Parents and children are linked for life. I'll just use the metaphor of the mobile phone. When your children are little, the mobile phone is your umbilical cord, and all you ask of these phones is that they're turned on and they don't ring. You just want to know your kids are okay. When they leave, you want the contrary. You want them on and you want them ringing occasionally with news and views and connections so that you stay connected with the wonderful humans that you may have been lucky enough to develop and create. So I think technology is a fantastic means of having an entirely new relationship with adult children that can be as close and connected as you want it to be, even across geographies and countries. None of my children live in my country, but I'm probably more connected to them now than I ever have been.
Oh, with FaceTime and so many ways that you can use technology, whether it's apps or keeping up with them on social media. What about social media? How close do you want to get there?
No, I don't social media with my kids. Again, I think I leave them their lives and careers and personal. I'm not friends on Facebook. I was not friended by one of them. I was friended by the other, but I'm not a big user of Facebook and never have been. So I've left them very much to their own devices online.
On their online life.
There are limits.
There are limits to what this relationship calls. And it's interesting, too, as we start to close here, because these adult children will eventually care for their parent in some way as their parent nears end of life. And I'm wondering how the values that you've instilled with them and they've seen these second revitalized careers and the new ambitions emerging in the 50s and 60s, how that will then cascade into the 80s and 90s as they start to care for that aging parent.
Well, I hope that their aging parents will learn how to manage these transitions and phases a bit more consciously, to choose, to downsize before we have to see the writing on the wall and go at it proactively and make the decisions for ourselves rather than letting our children make decisions for us, which requires embracing everything about aging and dying, living wills and, you know, clear instructions about how you want to end your life. And I do hope that our generation will have control over our end of life journeys as well. And I hope our children won't have to make those choices for us. I don't want to make choices for my children. I want them to have their own lives. And I very, very much hope that I won't burden them with any choices to make about my life.
Well, Aviva, this has been really wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us.
My great pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
That was Aviva Wittenberg-Cox. She's an author and speaker focused on leadership, gender, and business. She's CEO of a global gender balance consulting firm called 21st, and her book, Late Love, Mating and Maturity, came out in February. A recent article for Harvard Business Review is called What I Learned About Working Parenthood After My Kids Grew Up. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Deringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network.